Today, provide you with in-depth news and expert analysis, tell you the whole story and the bigger picture. Bring you the news you want to know only on Today.
Welcome to Today, a news program from a different perspective. I'm your host, Gu Anna. Coming up in this weekend edition, world leaders extend Spring Festival greetings to China. What does the movie Wandering Earth say about Chinese science fiction? And a Chinese actor attacked on social media over academic misconduct. To hear this episode again or to catch up on previous episodes, you can download our podcast by searching World News Analysis, or you can find us on EZFM or China Plus in your App Store. Today in the studio we have Zhang Hai, Research Fellow of Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, and my colleague Man Ling, CRI's English commentator. Welcome.
Thank you.
Only a few days left before the end of the Chinese Spring Festival this year. During the Chinese New Year celebration, many world leaders conveyed their best wishes to China and all the Chinese around the world. Besides greeting Happy New Year in different languages, many leaders also emphasized the importance they attached to their country's relations with China. Let's start with our neighboring country, Japan. Let's hear it from Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe.
大家过年好。
Happy Chinese New Year. This is Shinzo Abe. Last year was an important year in the history of Japan-China relations, and this year we'll see the promotion of China-Japan Youth Exchange. I'm ready to devote more efforts to promoting people-to-people exchanges, especially among young people. On the occasion of the Chinese New Year, I welcome more Chinese friends to visit Japan this year. At the same time, as the historical and cultural sites in China are also rich and colorful, I hope that more Japanese will also go to China to build a colorful bridge for mutual exchanges. Finally, I wish Japan-China relations make further progress in the new year.
That's Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe in Tokyo. He said Happy Spring Festival in Chinese in a video to mark the ceremony of decorating the landmark Tokyo Tower in red light, part of the Chinese New Year celebration. So extending warm New Year greetings to Chinese people through a video, this is the first time after Prime Minister Shinzo Abe took office. Then what can we read into the China-Japan relations last year and foresee it this year?
If you look at what happened basically last year and the year before, Chinese-Japanese relationship is continue to warm up. And it's interesting that at this particular time, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe came out and celebrated Chinese New Year. Ever since about a couple of years back, the Chinese tourist visit Japan during the spring break has increased dramatically. And right now, I mean, after this year's statistic came out, we find out that the number of Chinese visit Japan ranked number two, just right after Thailand. That means there's so many Chinese visitors as well as shoppers went to Japan and gave the Japanese economy a real boost at the time that the Japanese really needed it. We know that in the past 5 years, Abe economics is actually going pretty well under Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's leadership. However, the steam is quite slowing down a little bit, and also because of U.S.-Japan relationship also very tenseful. Shinzo Abe needs to get the relationship between Japan and China get better so that he can benefit from the improved relationship not only economically but also politically. So I think it's a smart move for him to celebrate the Chinese New Year, send his greetings to China, welcome Chinese visitors, and also remember he encouraged Japanese to visit China. That means increased people-to-people exchanges. That is the foundation of making the relationship getting even better in the long run.
I agree. Both economically and politically, we needed each other. We just cannot spare, you know, just bypass everybody. And then I have to say that including Shinzo Abe, many world leaders this year had greeted China, even in Chinese language. Mm-hmm. And I give a thumb up for their at least good gestures. That's good gestures. But I have to remind myself and my peers and my colleague, even Zhang Hai, that every problem still exists.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there is a saying that friends in need is friends indeed. I want to change indeed. Deed is action. Action speaks louder. Greetings are easy to get, you know, easier said than done. Mm. But what about the deeds, you know, coming up? Mm-hmm. If you're going to deliver, show us your sincerity, you should give us actual deeds, what you are planning to do on both sides, I mean, China and Japan and maybe other countries. So I think the latest is that they have made visa applications easier.
Yeah.
You know, all these very detailed things, their services they are providing the Chinese people to make this visits easier. So these are the things will show that China-Japan relationship is, like you said, warming up.
We are heading to a right direction so far, right? And talking about people-to-people exchange, and also Zhao Hai mentioned the Japan ranks the second place of the most popular overseas destination during the Spring Festival holiday for Chinese travelers. What makes Japan so attractive to Chinese travelers, in your opinion?
Well, I think culturally, China and Japan are quite similar, and we share the same heritage to a certain extent. And that makes Japan a place closer to home. You can enjoy some of the Chinese traditions there, but also at the same time, enjoy some of the characters specific to Japan. And Japan, as a tourist destination, has its own very strong advantages. For example, Japanese service is very good. If you ever travel to Japan, the food there, the service you enjoy, it's to a very high caliber. So I think that's what the Chinese tourists really enjoy. And secondly, during the winter, you have a lot of things you can do in Japan. Other than shopping, you can go to a warm spring. So I think it's good not only for yourself, but also for the whole family.
I agree with you. You almost just speak out my words. Number one is culturally, we are similar, but there is a difference. That is the attraction. You go and for novel experiences, that's one. And also service. Chinese people are developing nations. We are still looking up for the sophisticated, good quality services of the developed nations. And Japan belongs to one of the developed nations, and we feel so comfortable, we are better served. And the third one I want to add is the affordability, because it's near. A lot of us will say, hey, if we travel to Europe, it's too expensive, the air ticket, you know, you just, and Spring Festival especially, to avoid the crowds here within the country.
Bring crowds
but
to
relatively
Japan.
Speaking, yeah, bring crowds, because they're relatively speaking, this less crowded there. You know, if we're talking about good services, good food, good hot spring, you know, experiences, the food still too expensive for ordinary Chinese families there. 10 dumplings, jiaozi, it cost a fortune, something like that. But anyway, I think it's mostly the middle class people. But maybe in the future, it's going to be cheaper.
Yeah, I don't consider myself as a member middle of class. A middle class, but I've been to Japan. Yeah, what attracts me the most is that how well they preserved and developed the Chinese Asian culture from Tang and Song dynasties. Take Liancang or Kamakurashi, for example, the temples constructed by Chinese Zen master around the 1240s are still in very good shape and using quite a traditional method to spread Zen philosophy, which we barely can see in China. Zen is created by Chinese, but if you are a professional, you have to study it in Japan, you know, because it develops and grows in Japan in recent centuries.
That makes you think, what constitutes modernization? What is modernity? We think about modernization as making everything new.
No.
However, that's not true, right? Mm-hmm. As in Japan, as in many other, also if you go to Europe, same thing. They preserve traditional, you know, buildings, cultural heritage very carefully and meticulously. So I think it's very important for us to remember the lessons and really keep our own tradition in good shape.
Let's turn to London. British Prime Minister Theresa May hosted a Chinese New Year celebration reception at No. 10 Downing Street, which was specially decorated with cherry blossoms and a traditional well-wishing Chinese couplets, and affirmed the important role that the Chinese community plays in British life. Let's hear it.
The fireworks are being prepared, the red envelopes are being filled, and around the world, hundreds of millions of people are coming together to celebrate the Chinese New Year. Across the UK, lanterns are being hung in Manchester, Liverpool, Nottingham and many of our other great cities, including here in London, home to one of the biggest Chinese New Year celebrations outside Asia. The festivities are undoubtedly one of the highlights of Britain's cultural calendar, showcasing the strength, vibrancy and diversity of our multicultural society. And they're a reminder of the incredible role that our Chinese community plays in British life. from students who've just arrived here to study to families whose roots in this country go back well over a century. It's a legacy and a contribution that I celebrated here at Downing Street last week, bringing together leading figures from across our Chinese community, people without whom the UK would not be the successful, dynamic country it is today. So wherever and however you are celebrating, let me wish you a very happy new year and a prosperous and auspicious year of the pig.
Actually, besides what we heard, she also said Britain attaches importance to its relation with China, recalling the important consensus reached last year by both sides in promoting the golden era in bilateral relations. So how do you see China-UK relations in the coming year, and which area can we expect to see more fruit results?
Well, it's interesting if you look at not only Japan, Britain, and also other global leaders talking about the Spring Festival and Chinese tradition and Chinese culture, you realize that Chinese civilization is part of the global civilization. Many of our cultural heritage and characters are integrated into other countries. So when the British and also the Japanese leader, when they talk about this festival, they're not only speaking to Chinese audience, but they're also speaking to their own people.
Chinese community.
Mm-hmm. Within their country.
Mm-hmm.
So they're celebrating with us together. And also, I think at this time, if you look at the world, multilateralism or this global community is really growing with more and more countries are more and more developed. And the cultural characters are added to the originally, you know, mostly dominantly Western civilization and culture. So now we're not only celebrating Chinese festivals, but also like Indian and other cultures. And that means the world is getting better and more sort of integrated, inclusive of other cultures. That's the right direction we should have instead of have a monolithic kind of Western dominant culture.
Mm. Kind of shows that how China is merging itself with the rest of the world and how the world is receiving us. Mm. And I think Theresa May's sort of Spring Festival speech is not just to happen all of a sudden overnight this year.
Mm-hmm.
UK has been celebrating Chinese Spring Festival all these years. You know,
yeah.
I based there during 2001 to 2004 in Trafalgar Square. Mm. There were celebrations. Mm. And then what touched me most is that the white people, British people, are not just the onlookers.
Mm-hmm.
They joined.
Yeah, they participate.
Yeah, the activities.
They're very open-minded.
I think UK people and their government are one of the most liberal-minded government and people on this planet Earth.
Mm. I agree.
Number two is they are very pragmatic. They followed their guts and they have their own judgment because they are very active and open-minded in theories, in practical, in isms, communism, capitalism, all these. I think they are very sharp. They know what they want and they follow and they do action. They are not really taking sides. Of course, they follow United States because they cannot afford to losing that sort of relationship. But they are independent in thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really worry about UK-China relationships. I trust them so much.
Really, speaking about the US, we have to separate the US government and the US people.
Yes.
Right?
Mm. Yes.
Across the United States, if you go to any Chinatown, there will be a huge celebration, parades.
San Francisco,
the
float parade. Wow. One of the most beautiful thing I ever seen for the Chinese celebrations of Spring Festival.
Melanie, you mentioned about there's nothing to worry about China-UK relations. But, you know, just weeks after what May said, Britain has announced plans to send its new aircraft carrier to the South China Sea. UK Defence Secretary Gavin Williamson announced the deployment of the carrier in a speech, said Britain was the second largest investor in the region and it must display hard power and lethality to help protect its interests. So what do you make of his comments?
UK has been making efforts to maintain their presence everywhere. It's not easy for such a country to say, oh, I give away all my power. Used to be the most powerful nation, right? It's understandable that they would not give up their presence in any parts of the world, even in Africa, you know, in Hong Kong even. They left their footprints there and they kind of want to be, you know, continue to be there. I think it's the maintaining of their presence.
Well, first of all, let's say many countries, particularly Western developed countries, are now having a problem. It's almost schizophrenic. on the one hand, they have closer and closer economic relationship with China, and they wanted to celebrate this relationship culturally, economically, but politically, and particularly on security aspects, they still follow the U.S., and they still have a very antagonistic view about the Chinese system, and they have been confused about how to deal with the rise of China. If you look at the Japanese, on the one hand, they send the message of celebration, of cooperation, but on the other hand, they published a new report talking about Chinese military threat, and they wanted to have a more advanced military to deal with China and cooperate with the U.S. Same thing happened with Australia, Canada, and now with the British. They wanted to send their only operational aircraft carrier to the South. I don't even know what that's supposed to mean, right? Like, if you send a carrier, you need to send a carrier group because carrier cannot survive by itself.
Yes.
And can British at this moment, with the support of its own people, send a whole group to South China Sea, spending that kind of money and actually wasted
the capacity,
in that area?
Huh?
Do they have the capacity? There. And why do they want to do that? So I think this statement is just a show off, just trying to show their resolve. But in terms of putting it not on paper, but into practice, I don't even know how they can realize that.
Okay, let's move on. Last year, one of the most important foreign visits for President Xi Jinping is to Argentina, the G20 summit. Argentine President Mauricio Macri also extended his best wishes to Chinese around the world. Let's hear what he said.
Les deseo muy feliz año nuevo lunar a todo el pueblo chino.
I wish all the Chinese people, especially my respected friend President Xi Jinping, a happy new year. On the 70th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China, I hope the hearts of our people accord with those of yours. I'd like to extend my warmest wishes to the Chinese people around the globe. We welcome you to our country, where you can get to know our people and enjoy the beautiful scenery. Wish you happiness, wealth, and longevity.
Last year, we've seen progress and development China made with countries and regions. Overall, how do you view China's role in the world nowadays?
Well, let's take South America. I think there's a worrying trend happening in South America ever since last year when the left-wing governments are falling down one after another. And now the disturbance in Venezuela and also the changing of government in Salvador. There are many signs that the rising of the right-wing government and populist government in South America is challenging the globalization and the development, and particularly China's relationship with that region. So we're concerned about that development. However, we also firmly believe that in the long run, the people there demand development. They want to have a better life, and their connection and trade and economic relationship, cultural connection with China, will give them more opportunities instead of less. So I think China's role is growing because in the long run, people recognize that with China as a promoter of development, of connectivity, and of cooperation with other countries, they will have a different alternative in terms of financing, development experience, and a different kind of government and also economic setup they can follow. So I think overall, China contribute to the world with the Chinese different plans, particularly the Belt and Road Initiative, encouraged countries to join, to participate and share the experience and prosperity with China. So I think in the past decade, China's role and importance has grown more and more globally. For instance, the United Nations. We have now the number one contributor to the United Nations, a number one in terms of peace security forces. So I think China is playing a critical role in maintaining the stability of global governance and contributing to the peace and prosperity of the world. However, a lot of people are not satisfied or not recognizing the reality and recognizing China's contribution to the world. They label China as a revisionist, as serving China's own interest and detrimental to others' interest. I think we need to have a better communication about Chinese intentions. But at the same time, I mean, other countries also need to come back to an objective evaluation of China's role in the world. And I think that can be done. It's just in the short run, we might run into some bumpy roads, and hopefully better communication will contribute to better relations.
Besides what we've heard, more world leaders from UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres to President of Pakistan, Austria, Estonia, Czech, Uruguay, Zimbabwe, and Panama to Prime Minister of Denmark, New Zealand, Canada, and so on have extended their greetings to Chinese around the world, even in Chinese. Let's check it out.
Guanyin Hao. I wish all the Chinese people a very prosperous and happy New Year of the Pig.
Allow me to wish you a very happy Chinese Spring Festival. Qin Zhong Kuan Le.
Qin Zhong Kui Li. Gong Xi Fa Tai.
I would like to extend my greetings first and foremost to His Excellency the President of the People's Republic of China, President Xi Jinping, and wish all the people of China Happy Chinese New Year.
Chun Zhe Guai Lu.
Tin Chun Guai Lu. Chuan Yan Hao.
Qin Yin Hao. Zhong Dan Yao Hao.
Chuan Zhe Guai Lu.
Xin Nian Guai Lu.
Xin Ni An Guai Lu. Song Ni Fai Lu.
Xin Nian Guai Lu.
Jun Yan Da Ji. Gong Xi Fa Tai.
中国你好，今天是春节，我祝贺我的中国朋友新年快乐，万事如意，身体健康，春节好。
愿大家猪年快乐，大吉大利，事事如意，岁岁平安，幸福年年，财运滚滚。
I think both of you share the same feelings with me. I have to applaud to the last two, the spokesperson of Russian Foreign Ministry and the Cultural Minister of Thailand. Not only world leaders, renowned public figures like Bill Gates Manling just mentioned, for example, also expressed appreciation on Chinese exciting progress against poverty, disease, and global development.
Hi, I'm Bill Gates. I'd like to extend belated Chinese New Year greetings to you. Over the past four decades, China lifted over 800 million people out of poverty and became the second largest economy in the world. Now it's stepping up its efforts to help solve some of the toughest challenges in the rest of the world. During my recent visit to China, I attended the Reinvented Toilet Expo and once again saw China's innovation capacity with companies showcasing game-changing products that will benefit billions who today don't have access to safe sanitation. I met Chinese scientists who are discovering new drugs to tackle infectious diseases like tuberculosis that affect the poor. And I talked with Chinese partners who are sharing lessons from China's own development so African countries can make progress on vital priorities such as strengthening health systems and controlling deadly diseases like malaria and also improving agricultural transformation. I believe in China's ability to help hundreds of millions of young people in the world's poorest countries fulfill their potential. As we usher in the new year, our foundation is committed, as always, to supporting China in building a better future for all.
Zhao, what's your take on Bill's speech and China's efforts on innovation and making the world a better place, as he said?
I think there should be more people like Bill Gates pointing out China's contribution to the world and recognize that the Chinese historical experience in lifting millions and millions of people out of poverty should be shared around the globe. I think he pointed out the important areas in which China contributed, but also China can share with other countries and cooperate with other countries to help people in other poor countries to be out of poverty and have better and healthy life. So his words said something that really a lot of people like him knew what happened in China and outside, how China should be respected. However, in contrast to him, a lot of people in the U.S., particularly those hawkish people against China, don't understand and don't appreciate China's contributions. Just a couple of days ago, there's a new report putting out by, I think, 17 Chinese experts in the U.S. called a correcting course, something like that. They're saying that if the United States want to compete with China, they should adopt a policy called smart competition. That means in some areas, when the competition is healthy, yeah, you should compete with China. However, you can't just bash in China and ignore all the potential areas of cooperation like climate change, global governance, right? So I think a lot of people like Bill Gates recognize that there are huge opportunities when U.S. and China and China and other countries work together to contribute to a better world. We're now facing global challenges like poverty, like climate change. It's severe. Look at the weather this year. It's abnormal. It's extreme. There's so many things we can do together instead of just having this infighting with each other. And I think Bill Gates' New Year celebration and his words conveyed this message, and it's really a good timing.
Gates definitely is a public figure, very important one. So his words weigh more than others. So I shall thank him for not being blinded by prejudices and by ideologies. And I think he kind of give credit to what China has been doing and contributing. He mentioned the reinvented toilet expo. Because within 40 years, many Chinese people, including myself, being lifted from using, you know, the stool when I was young. And this is a miracle. No other country on this planet Earth can lift millions and even billion people out of poverty within such a short period of time. So we have precious experiences that we are ready to share, because only by common development and common prosperity we can achieve a happier, better world.
Indeed. Thanks, Zhao Hai, Research Fellow of Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, and my colleague Man Ling, our commentator. You're listening now is our weekly edition of Today with me, Guiana. Stay tuned.
For breaking news and the stories that matter to you, check out our Twitter page and follow us by searching China Plus News. We focus on the Middle Kingdom.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Today, where we talk about hot topics and intriguing issues online. I'm Guiana. I'm joined in the studio by Zhao Hai, Research Fellow of Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, and my colleague Man Ling, CRI's English commentator. The hit Chinese science fiction film The Wandering Earth dominated this year's Lunar New Year box office, opening on February 5th, raking in over 2.7 billion yuan, about 400 million US dollars, in less than a week in China alone. Audience reactions to the movie have so far been largely positive, and the movie currently has high scores on all kinds of review sites. Based on works by novelist Liu Cixin, it tells the story of a group of Chinese astronauts working to save Earth from a dying and rapidly expanding sun. The heat of the movie put it on track to become the country's most successful film of all time. So, Manling, do you mind elaborate a bit about the storyline of the movie?
I went to see it, and I have to tell everyone that from the very beginning until the end, I was not
distracted.
Spoiler
alert.
Yeah, no details, but I was attracted to it. Okay. Although I'm not a scientist, so I didn't find out any bugs because it's not within my capacity, but I was drawn to the plot. Basically, it means that the sun is dying, so we cannot live on the sun. We need to find a place. This movie is extremely idealistic one. It's the United Nations, true United Nations being united to find a solution for the whole mankind. And the solution, we have to carry our home with us. The Earth as a globe is our...
to save more people.
Yeah, it not only save people, it's our attachment to home.
Yes.
To filial piety, to our care for the next generation. Even though it means 99% is a failure. It's only 1% of success. But because we want our children to be able to survive and to be able to enjoy life, let's make it and then it succeeds. So it's all Chinese values. We emphasize family, we emphasize a father relationship, and we emphasize kind of a brotherlyhood, because within this family, there's a little girl picked up from the street. It's not really blood sort connected. Of relationship, but this movie amazed me is because there's no Bond girl. No celebrities of that kind of level. There's no man and woman feeling in loving, kissing each other. No such scene at all. It's all about family, friendship, and united. This is a really too idealistic world, because here, you know, in contrast of what we're having today, mm-hmm. we have a United Nations that being established a long time ago, but within this United Nations, mm-hmm. it's not united, it's nations. Mm-hmm. But in that movie, people work together, all yes. the nations, just to tackle big problem of survival. Mm. So this is a really good movie, I think.
Mm. How about you, Joe? Are you amazed?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is historical. This is a watershed for a Chinese movie. Other than what Manning has already pointed out, I'm really glad that there's so many things out in my mind. I watched it twice, actually. Number one,
twice?
Yes, as you said, first of all, I'm a science fiction fan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'm also a fan of Liu Cixin.
Okay.
Really glad that his short novel has been converted into movies.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll
he
be more movies,
novel
I think.
He finished that novel 2006, right?
Yeah,
long time ago,
long,
actually. Yeah.
Long time ago. Mm. And a lot of his very famous pieces are written actually in the beginning of this century. Well, one of the things is that the threshold for science fiction movies are very high. The standards are setting by the Hollywood. In order to make a true science fiction movie and make it believable, it's very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's why in China, the movie makers are rarely able to touch upon this genre.
Almost scared. Almost,
yeah, the investment is too high, the standard is too high, and you have to get everything right other than science, and you have to get the story right, you get performance right. So this movie, even though there's flaws that has been pointed out by a lot of people, but I think it's really a success
mm-hmm.
in many respects, because they really invested in the visual effects, in the
in
technology,
this, yes. mm-hmm.
and make it believable. And that is on the same
at least
caliber.
For ordinary people like
for ordinary
me.
People, yeah. So I think it's very convincing, Chinese people going there when they come out, no matter what flaws they can point out. But there's one thing they recognize, that is the visual effects is on par with the Hollywood movies.
Mm-hmm.
And we should celebrate that, because we now realize in this industry, we're catching up with the world standard. And because of that, that is very successful. And secondly, most importantly, is the Chineseness of the science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, it's global. Because I think other countries, people can enjoy the movie because there are so many things that we share together. But at the same time, the values, you know, in this movie are really purely Chinese, because if you watch any other movie from Hollywood, if there's signs of crisis on Earth, you go somewhere else.
You leave.
There's another movie, right? You leave, you
leave.
Find another home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's really Western experience. That is colonization. Mm-hmm. Right, you colonize a different place, you just migrate to another place. And in this movie, we move the whole earth.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, the price of housing in Beijing is too high. We can't just abandon it. We have to bring it along with us.
Yeah.
So that's what, and also family value from mm-hmm. this movie.
The father's love.
Yeah, the father's
yeah,
love. And I'm really glad that Wu Jing made this movie after the Wolf Warrior 2.
Mm-hmm.
Because The Wolf Warrior 2 was also a blockbuster, mm-hmm. you know, and also the Red Sea Operation.
Mostly Chinese blockbuster.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah.
When you make
and
that
this one
movie,
is a world one.
It's
right?
also, you use Hollywood technology, you make it, you know, a really good war movie. But that's too nationalistic. We call it patriotic. However, if you give that movie to other countries' people may not appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we're growing and getting more and more matured, and we realize our global responsibility. And that's a good thing, because then other people, like I said, it really stressed the problem of communication. Now,
mm-hmm.
if you put something that we're facing a common challenge and we resolve it as a community,
mm-hmm.
We share the destination, right? So
mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing this movie is really good about. Even though you still have containing that movie, you have the Chinese value in it. However, you have also a common shared value
mm-hmm.
with other countries and other peoples.
Mm. We talked about praise and criticism in the moviegoers and professionals' views domestically and internationally. Then how do you see the reaction? One of the reviews said, according to some Western media, the movie has been criticized as overly nationalistic, because you mentioned
Wolf Warrior 2.
Yeah, effectively acting as a government propaganda. Did you see it compared to most of American movies? We know one American hero or even American junkie can save the world.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a double standard? How could a similar plot happen to a group of Chinese with the help of non-mainstream countries will be considered as propaganda?
Number one, I do not want to compare Number two, I want to emphasize that it's only the perspective that we are different. I think the Hollywood blockbusters, they emphasize individual heroes and they play down the government sort of thing. But here in China, we are a collective society. Like the movie, you know, the Wandering Earth. So we want the family, we want to be together. You know, it's just the different perspectives. But today, the world is faced with a lot of problems. For example, terrorism, environmental protection, globalization, climate change. Only emphasizing individual power is not enough, longer enough. Yeah. So we need to come together and make common efforts. This is the message I received from the Chinese value movie, I call it. So we learn to move a little bit towards individualism. And then the Western society maybe should not ignore the collective power of people.
I think on top of what Manling has pointed out, we have to ask another question, further question. Mm-hmm. What individualism? If you look at Hollywood movies, who are the heroes? Historically, those are white male, Christian, for instance, right? Mm. And now Hollywood self is evolving. Now you have Black Panther, right?
Yeah.
So gradually you have the main characters are not white male anymore. You have women coming up, you have black, and even crazy rich Asians. You have a whole Asian cast. So the heroes are changing, the individualism, the meaning, the cultural symbol of individualism is also changing within Hollywood.
Yes.
So I think around the globe, we have a revival of multiculturalism. We have an evolvement of this really a new enlightenment. The world recognizing different peoples, different cultures, different civilizations' contribution. And China is part of it. And I think it's not just happening in China, but happening in other countries, in Hollywood to Bollywood. And that's something to be celebrated. I think we'll see more and more of this diversification, you know, from the very beginning of this dominant Western civilization.
You mentioned Hollywood and Bollywood. I think this is the movie that going out is well received in the United States. So it is truly going abroad because we used to be importing a lot of blockbusters into China. And now, starting from now, it's an epoch-making milestone that maybe in the future, because we have already set standard here. So the future movie makers are going to make really nice, good movies that can go abroad. So our movies start to go global. And then this will lead to me to just allow my wild imagination to think about that maybe we're going to have a Charlie-wood. Like Charlie Hollywood, or Bollywood, or Charlie-wood.
No, it's Hengdian-wood.
China-wood.
Yeah, Hengdian-wood.
Hengdian-wood. Any whatever wood that belongs to a China branding of Chinese movie. Right.
Anyhow, it's a successful try. Hope more and better movies are waiting in front of us. That's our guest, Zhao Hai, Research Fellow of Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, and Man Ling, CRI English commentator. Just now, we've been talking about the smash hit Chinese science fiction movie, The Wandering Earth. Let's take a short break. Stay with us.
In-depth analysis, valuable insights, expert views, presented by an award-winning team. Today, keeping you well-informed, up-to-date, and ahead of the news.
Welcome back. You're listening to Today, a news program from a different perspective. I'm Ge Anna with Zhao Hai, Research Fellow of Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, and Man Ling, CRI's English commentator. A Chinese TV actor with academic ambitions who also has a PhD from Beijing Film Academy and is a postdoctoral candidate at Peking University found himself in hot water recently after allegations of plagiarism, which kicked off a new wave of discussion over academic misconduct in China. Zhai Tianling has denied the charge at first through his management agency. Social media users responded by digging into the 31-year-old actor's academic history and quickly went on the attack when they found his paper is 40.4% uncannily similar to an article by a professor published by an academy journal in 2006. The post stirred a heated debate in Chinese cyberspace with many netizens saying it is unfair to students who work hard to obtain a degree. They called for strict rules on academic misconduct. Beijing Film Academy and Peking University have already launched investigations to look into Zhai's case and have zero tolerance for academic misconduct. And hours ago, the actor apologized for his behavior on social media, Weibo. So, Zhanghai, the academic integrity crisis for actor Zhai Tianlin, what does this case tell you?
Well, first question came to my mind was, why do an actor need a doctor? And also, even a postdoc, a lot of people thinking that postdoc is actually a degree. Mm. I have to explain to them many times that doctor is the highest degree you can pursue. Postdoc is not a,
it's a
some kind of degree.
It's a job.
Yeah, it's a job. It's a actually an apprentice kind of internship, right? So that means culturally, in China, a lot of people just want to pursue a higher and higher degree, and people respect that kind of degree and thinking those are the people with the best knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the case. Actually, being a doctor, meaning that you dive into a specific professional area of knowledge, you know more about that, but not necessarily know more of everything than other people.
Mm-hmm.
And in many areas now, this degree has been commercialized. And a lot of people pursue this degree. For instance, they just being proud of showing other people when they pick out their business card and say, somebody,
I'm a PhD.
I'm a PhD. So we're now talking about a wider problem that is cultural, but also administratively corruptive practices in those universities.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's good that we discover this problem through this actor. However, I think there's a wider, deeper problem we need to tackle. And it's good now that the government has already sent in the investigation group and the conclusions will come out very quickly. And I think it's not going to be good to the actor or the people who followed him. I mean, use the same technique to get their degrees.
Mm.
I think we should be really careful about the granting of degrees, and we need to understand the purpose of that. It's the training of professionals to develop a specific subject and to help people, I mean, the society, to gain better knowledge and higher knowledge. If that degree becomes some kind of a show-off just to other people, I don't think the society as a whole should pursue that, and we should put a stop to it.
I think the phenomenon of degree worship, I call it, it's not just Chinese, it's universal.
Mm.
And look at the name cards we were presented by some of the cross-culture ambassadors, I call them. It's all kinds of titles, this degree, that honor, that it's actually no use. PhD is being devalued because of these people. So I want to say that about this actor. I think I was impressed by his role played in the the White Deer Plane, a very good TV series that we had.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed by his acting. I loved him.
Good
although
actor.
I didn't remember his name. So in my opinion, that if you want to become an actor, right, you don't need a doctor degree as a decoration. It's already enough. But then giving it a second thought, I think maybe it's all the branding of his renshuo. Character setting, personal image design, or we call it branding, personal branding.
Mm-hmm.
It's because entertainment circle is too hard to establish himself.
Okay. So he want to find a unique way.
I know, he want to find a shortcut, as he has already expressed his remorse. He apologized. But I want to say that, as you said, PhD degree or degree of any kind is for researchers to go deeper into theories of certain field. If you are an academician or you're an academy or your talent is in researching, then you can pursue that. And I'm not saying that actors do not need a PhD or higher theoretical knowledge. For example, I want to say Meryl Streep, the American
actress.
I love her. She used to be the highest degree owner among actors and actresses. And I was thinking, you know, with that knowledge, she portrayed all her characters better. His case is the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg. Only because he's a celebrity. It's like a trigger start the whole thing, you know. I've been working on campus in the university from 83 to 92. And starting from that time, it's already nepotism, cronyism. Chinese professors are turning their students into private servants even, you know, running errands, you know. Hey, my mom is sick. Can you send my mother to hospital?
Yeah.
You know, these are the things that we need to stop. Another example is that one professor, my friend, told me that she has to beg her student to finish the final essay because her student was busy earning money and they never finished the final touch. SE. I said, why you need to beg her? She said, because if she does not graduate, that means my job failed. So the next year, the government or the school will not allow me to recruit new students. That means I'm going to be having nothing to do. As a professor, you're not going to be allowed to recruit postgraduate another one. So these are the things that we need to rectify, correct.
I remember the year last year or the year before, there was a famous letter circulating from American University. There was a woman professor wrote a letter to her student. PhD student is plagiarizing or doing bad work. And she actually explained the reason why her student should be hardworking. And that's individual responsibility. So basically, once you enter into the program, it is your responsibility to study hard to get graduated. It's not your teacher's or advisor's responsibility because you pay the tuition fee. Maybe coming from yourself, your loan, or your family. You need to make that work. Because the advisor, the teachers, are the source of knowledge. You're not dependent upon them. You need to study hard to get yourself through the program. And I think that's what's lacking. A lot of people enrolled in the program after the test, you know, entrance examination is so important in China. So people thinking, oh, once I get in, I get in. It's finished. The job is done. Actually, that's just the beginning. Once you enter into the program, it's just the start. You have to study harder to get passed and, you know, finally get the degree.
Learn the real knowledge and learn the real skills. And this is our problem. The university is so hard to enter. So the college entrance examination is the final, the hardest battle to fight for Chinese students to get into the college. And then after getting into the college, it's all fun and computer games in the evening and whatever. And it's easy to graduate. That's not true.
But that's what our parents, our teachers told us. And
yes, this is not right. As Zhonghai said, actually, in good universities, it's also hard to enter because you're being selected, right? You have to be good. But then that's only the first step. There are harder life on campus waiting for you because the real competition starts. Harvard University, there are people, some Chinese students were misled by their adults who said, hey, once you enter the university, life will be just easy. No, and then there are pictures sending from overseas, say, hey, look at the Harvard campus. All the lights were on the whole night. People were studying so hard. It's a global competition. Life is never easy after you enter. So I think something is wrong with our education system. And we should not really, I'm not defending Zhai Tianling. He is only an example of how he is taking advantage of this not so perfect education system to serve his own personal gain. So it should be corrected.
Okay, talking about the responsibilities of the professors, in your opinion, should Zhai's supervisor be responsible for the failure in supervision and instruction if he finds Zhai is confirmed to violate the academic integrity?
Of course, they should be held responsible. Yeah. And the schools also, and even the Education Commission at the ministerial level, I think. If you're going to go deeper, it's like a chain reaction. You know, everybody on this rope or string should be held accountable.
Well, in the Zhai Tianling, the specific case, from what I heard, allegedly, it's not confirmed. We need the investigation. But from the look of it, he actually boasted his graduation on his Weibo, on his blog.
He's using
it
as a publicity.
He said he spent only like a night, like a couple of days to finish his dissertation. And that is unthinkable. The responsibility of the advisor should continue for years from the very beginning to, you know, to first have the structure of your dissertation and supervise the students to go through the materials and construct their theory, and then to ultimately examine every chapter and finally the whole dissertation. It takes a lot of work for his chief academic advisors and also his committee to supervise the quality of the dissertation. If, as he said, the dissertation is finished so quickly and probably somebody else had done other works for him, and that is completely unacceptable, and that is a total failure of the academic system.
The pursuit of higher learning, don't you think we want to get wisdom and knowledge from pursuing higher learning? And this one is a case, an evidence of stupidity. You know, you're boasting about something so stupid. Are you smarter after you studied PhD?
With a title, maybe.
Yeah, he actually wanted to use it for the good of his publicity, getting more famous. But I have, in my life circle, I have numerous PhD degree owner friends, and I have never seen them stop working. But I have one man that I respected so much, my brother-in-law. He actually could maintain his doctor. You know, he's a doctor in the hospital. You know, you can sign up and pay money and then you can get a PhD degree while not losing your job, right? But he decided, no, I need to quit my job in order to...
Full-time.
Yeah, a full-time PhD program. So for him, he has sober-mindedness, I said. Although he was faced with a problem of re-employment, he may not be able to find the same good job, right? But it proved that his decision is right. Such people are the ones that I respect.
So is this a common phenomenon among actors and actresses, in your opinion?
No, most of the actors and actresses, they do not really emphasize academic sort of achievement that much. I think this man is too anxious to be famous. If he is really good at researching, I definitely approve, you know, he pursues such a degree. But so obviously he's doing plagiarism, you know, all these sort of things. But he damages his own image so much. I want to say that integrity is so important to every one of us. Because if you want to go higher as an actor, you become an artist. You're not being an artist, it's to create beauties, right? Create beauties, you have to be beautiful in heart by yourself. Otherwise, how can you create beauties for the other people to enjoy, right?
I think Zhai is accidentally revealed, right? In the interview, he didn't know what Zhi Wang.
Yeah.
That's the problem. It's just like if you're studying in the US for a PhD, towards a PhD, you don't know what G-Store is. But in the last year, think about what happened to the actor and actress as a class. Right, there's so many problems with their contracts, like, with tax system, with their knowledge, you know, with their degrees, whatever. I think what happened is that because of the rising of entertainment industry in China, because of they're so well paid and there's so many money making opportunities around, and some of those people, particularly the celebrities, don't know who they are and don't really stick to the moral values that they should have. And I think that's the fundamental problem, because when you commercialize, you know, making a lot of things like commodities and trade them, you only focus on the monetary value side of the things instead of, you know, paying more attention to the moral side of the things. And that's the problem. It also happened to our soccer team.
Yeah. It's a healthy process, actually, right?
I think that's good. At this time, they're exposed, and hopefully the remedy will come as quickly as possible. One thing I think is positive, and sort of a lot of people are trying to push this for many years, and that is in recent days, the Ministry of Education sent a new order basically converting a lot of the universities, so-called universities, into vocational schools, into professional schools. And that's a good sign, because in many ways, in this country, we need skilled workers. We need, you know, engineers instead of just a lot of people holding college degrees who don't know practically what to do.
Indeed, that brings more discussions, but unfortunately, we ran out of time for today. Thanks to all of our guests for being with us. Zhao Hai, Research Fellow of Chinese Academy of Social Science, my colleague Manling, CRI's English commentator. That's it for this weekend edition of Today. I'm Ge Anna. A quick recap of today's headlines. World leaders extend Spring Festival greetings to China. What does the movie Wandering Earth say about Chinese science fiction? And a Chinese actor attacked on social media over academic misconduct. If you want to hear this episode again or to catch up on previous episodes, you can download our podcast by searching World News Analysis, or you can find us on Easy FM or China Plus in your App Store. Thank you so much for joining us.